now it's time to sit back and relax. You're listening to KTSW San Marcos.
Coming at you live from the KTSW studios in San Marcos, Texas, this is Bobcat Radio.
Sorry, I get carried away.
Welcome to Bobcat Radio, a hour of Texas State, San Marcos, local news and sports. I am your host, Andrew Zimmel. What you just heard was Alex Gibbs singing along, and we're joined by Dominic Ainsley as well, coming to you live from the KTSW studios in the always sunny Texas State campus in San Marcos, Texas. Let's get this week started off right. If you have any questions, you want to join the conversation, we're on Twitter for the young kids, at KTSW Sports, at KTSW Sports, or if you want to make the hotline bling, call 512-245-3473. That's 512-245-FIRE. Later today, Texas State will take the field, the softball field, that is, to play Boston College. He went 0-4 in the Aggie Classic last weekend, losing to Texas Tech, Houston, and Texas A&M in their last game against Texas Tech being canceled due to weather. Today should be sunny, but a little bit chilly. That game comes at you at 1 p.m., so it's going to be at the softball complex. So, I mean, if you are in between classes or if you're just in the city, might as well go see some softball. This team's pretty good right now.
Heck yeah, check out the softball team right now. They're now 2-2 to start the season. It was unfortunate that they lost a couple games over the weekend, but still overall a pretty good start and impressive performance by Randy Rupp in her first appearance of the season.
Yeah, if there's a... I think there's three constants in life. There's death, taxes, and Texas State softball being really, really unbelievably good.
This is true. We're going to get into all of that action, plus a little bit of baseball coming up later in the week. And then, of course, Texas State men's and women's basketball both falling in overtime. I don't know how often this happens, where both of the basketball teams will go into overtime, and then both of them will have my heart ripped out twice. It was just, I made fun
of... This is the second overtime that the men's team, I believe, have played this year.
It's the second overtime out of the last three games, actually. So, I mean, they've been playing a lot of, getting into extra time a lot recently, not being able to get the job done, too. Like I said, we're going to jump into all of that. I do want to talk about this. This is the biggest international event since the Summer Olympics a couple years ago. The Winter Olympics. The ones that bring in all the ratings. So, right now, this is the... medal count. Germany has 4 gold medals, Netherlands has 3, Canada has 2, and then the United States has 2. To round out the top 10, you have France, Norway, Sweden, Austria, the Republic of Korea, and the Czech Republic. So the medal counts are getting up there. I don't know how much you guys have been watching of the Winter Olympics. I've been kind of catching a lot of the reruns.
Yeah, I've been mostly following the Olympics on social media because I was busy over the weekend with homework and stuff, but how about last night seeing how, Mira Nagasu is the first U.S. woman to land a triple axel in Olympic competition. And a triple axel is in figure skating, of course. And if any of you guys are ever interested in figure skating, there's a movie out actually called I, Tanya. That's about Tanya Harding and her experience in the 90s, which is a really, really interesting film. But that's besides the point. Congratulations to Nagasu. What an incredible performance that she had last night. And unfortunately, the team got bronze. But still, I mean, they got a medal nonetheless.
Yeah, it's very exciting to see a lot of these sports. I saw a bunch of people making fun on Twitter and all over social media that, you know, you don't watch snowboarding until this time of the year. And then all of a sudden, everybody's a snowboarding expert.
Exactly.
What should Sean White do? What should this person do? What should that person do?
Well, he won't get on the podium unless he lands like a 16-20, something like that. You know, they'll always come up with something funny, so.
Yeah, and in the Summer Olympics, it's always swimming. Oh, what's Michael Phelps going to do this time? Oh, is he going to come out of retirement? Is he going to do this? Is he going to do that? Same thing.
I will say it's very interesting that the Winter Olympics, of course, being in South Korea, this was going to be a big international event. You know, it's looking pretty good right now. So far, there hasn't been any international incidents. There hasn't been anything crazy happening. So, I mean, I'm very, very happy the way that this Winter Olympics has been going.
Yeah, and the other really interesting news is right in the middle of this Olympics going on right now, I believe the North and South Korean leaders are supposed to be meeting sometime soon, which kind of right now in the midst of the Winter Olympics going on right there right now kind of makes things like really interesting just overall, as a story perspective.
Very good geopolitical just event in the entirety.
Yeah, now, and they're going as one unified Korea, aren't they?
I think that's what it means by Republic of Korea.
Yeah, I think they're just going as one. They only have, like, 10 athletes, but they brought, like, 200 quote-unquote cheerleaders, so...
That's kind of creepy.
It is. It really is.
The North Korean cheerleaders are a little bit... This is on the creepy side. It kind of looks... Well, I'm just saying, it kind of looks like everybody's, like, you know, in unison, and there's, like...
It's eerie.
It is. I want to talk about something not eerie. I want to talk about Texas State legend that came around this area that Alex got to talk to this last week. I know we all were very jealous. I know that Dom and I especially were jealous, but Brendan Snow really had his... got twisted up about this because he really wanted to see Paul Goldschmidt.
Well, so did Reed Graff as well. He actually signed up to go to the dinner as well, but we had a couple of guys here in the studio that caught the flu, unfortunately, and he had to help produce a game that was going on at the same time as that dinner on Friday night, which is really unfortunate. But I was still able to have a really, really good time speaking with Paul Goldschmidt.
So talk to us about the event. Give us all the background, how this end up happening.
Well, this place that we went to was in New Braunfels. It was a really, really nice area. You had a church building with not a wedding reception, but actually a wedding rehearsal right next to us. And then this other building where they had the dinner at was very, very nice. The whole event was put together by the Goldschmidt family for Texas State Athletics, particularly Texas State Baseball. And it was just a joy. I mean, they had an auction of all kinds of MLB memorabilia. They had bats signed by guys like Manny Machado, Josh Donaldson. You also had a Paul Goldschmidt's jersey from when he was in the postseason in the wild card game, which was really cool. They had all kinds of stuff there that was really interesting. Oh, and they also had some nostalgic gear there, some of the old Texas State baseball uniforms back when they were Southwest Texas State University.
Ooh, I know Dom and I were looking at old.
Oh, wow. We were looking at throwback jerseys from a website we've stumbled upon before the show, and yeah, that would have been really cool to have a Southwest Texas State jersey.
Yeah, both of our mouths are watering right now. Continue.
And the dinner overall was just really, really interesting. You had Ty Harrington, the head baseball coach, come up and talk about the team and talk about his experience when he first came to Southwest Texas State at the time in 2000, going on their conference championship run, which was really interesting. And then, ironically, when Paul Goldschmidt came up to speak, it wasn't just him. It was him and his dad. And they kind of did it at a different format. Instead of Goldschmidt just giving this big speech or anything, they did kind of like a cute little Q&A, just like kind of like a father-son dynamic going on there. And there was just a lot of interesting stories told. Like, for example, the story of him touring Texas State is really interesting. So he gets a couple emails, he gets a couple phone calls about, hey, why don't you come check out Texas State? So he goes down there, and he shows up at the baseball field, and his dad swears by this. What happened was you had the coach take him to where the quad is, and it must have been like 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It was in the middle of summer. It was really, really hot. It was like 100-some degrees outside. You know, normal Texas summer weather, or Texas spring weather, I should say. Anyways, and the bell rings, and you have all these girls come out and just start walking by, and his dad swears by this. Paul's eyes got really, really wide. You have one of the coaches whisper in his ear. He doesn't know what he said, but whatever that was, that's what his dad thinks convinced him to come to Texas State. And ironically, he did meet his wife when he went to Texas State, which is very, very interesting.
That makes sense because Texas State does have some very, very beautiful women.
They do.
So. Very intelligent women.
Very intelligent. Very best women in all.
Beauty and brains.
Right. Best women in all of Texas State.
So I know you got some audio clips for us.
I do. I had a lot of interesting stuff. First things first was I asked him, like, what his time here meant at Texas State, Coach Harrington, and why he chose Texas State. So without further ado, here is Paul Goldschmidt.
It was huge. You know, just another step, but, you know, I didn't know how realistic it was I was going to get to play after college. I was just excited. Somebody wanted me to come play in college and offered me a scholarship, and honestly didn't know much about St. Marcus and Texas State, and they asked me to come on a recruiting trip, and I fell in love with this place the first day. You know, I don't really can't explain it. I just remember driving away and telling my parents, hey, I'm going to come to school here, and, you know, a couple weeks later, we called Coach Harrington, committed, and then, you know, they were very honest with me about what it was like here, and how Coach Harrington is, you know, in his interviews, how he treats his players is exactly how he treated me on that recruiting trip, and I appreciated that. You never know. It's going to change. So I learned a lot here, you know, Coach Harrington, especially with the infielders and the coaches we had. You know, Coach Trout's here. He was one of the volunteers when I was here. Jeremy Fikoch, who just left here, was, you know, very instrumental, and Coach Bouchon, too. So just to be able to grow and for those guys to give me the opportunity to play was huge. Just had a lot of fun and great memories.
We're going to get into more of that Paul Goldschmidt audio a little bit after the break. Of course, we're going to talk about Texas State men's and women's basketball, and then, of course, baseball and softball. Before we go, Bobcat Radio is sponsored by the University Bookstore, located on the second floor of LBJ Student Center. The University Bookstore provides support for Texas State programs, departments, events, and organizations. For more information, go to bookstore.txstate.edu or 245-2273. Listen to Bobcat Radio on KTSW 89.9.
Hi, I'm KTSW's biggest fan. Some of my favorite pastimes include lurking in the bushes outside of the studio or attending every KTSW event for the past 7 years. How do I know about these events? KTSW's Facebook. Go to facebook.com/KTSW899 to keep up with upcoming shows, events, and contests to win tickets to cool KTSW events where you can hang out with the staff. It's a stalker, fan's dream.
Hey, this is the last time we're telling you. Get out of the bushes.
I love you!
Ah, my head. How did I get here?
Good question. How did you get here?
Who are you?
I'm philosophy.
What? What's going on? I have class in 10 minutes.
You're in Schrodinger's box. There is and isn't escape.
What are you talking about?
I'll tell you, but you have to tune in to Philosophy Talk every Monday at 7 a.m. with Ken Taylor and John Perry, hosted by KTSW 89.9.
Okay, I will. I promise. But can I please go to class now?
Can you?
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. If you just are tuning in, you just missed us talking a little bit about the Olympics, and now we're going to go more into this Paul Goldschmidt story. You're telling us you went to, a big, nice hotel the Goldschmidt family put on for Texas State baseball. We talked about how Goldschmidt ended up at Texas State. Just a little recap for everybody just now tuning in. Go into more. Talk to us a little bit more about what you saw, what you heard from NL MVP finalists this last year.
Yeah, and not just last year, but in the past few years. It's unfortunate that we haven't seen him win an MVP yet because he's got incredible numbers. But going back to the dinner, back to when him and his father were talking up on stage, one of the other really interesting stories is right after he came down to tour Texas State, he had to go up to Dallas and play a game later that afternoon. And there was a kid, there was a lot of scouts there anyways, and the parking lot was packed, and there was all kinds of scouts and MLB guys there just checking out who was throwing. And Paul Goldschmidt, of course, plays, and he strikes out 3 times, and all of the other batters struck out 9 times during that game. Can
now,
you guess?
I want to give, because you asked me this question, I want to kind of toss it to Dom. What Dallas area pitcher do you think could strike out the great Paul Goldschmidt 3 times?
Oh, geez. Clayton Kershaw.
None other than Clayton Kershaw himself. So not only has Paul Goldschmidt faced Clayton Kershaw in the major leagues, but he faced him before he was even drafted. How incredible of a story is that? I mean, that is so interesting. Not only did he strike out, but he struck out 3 times. I mean, he got that whole lineup. All kinds of scouts were there. All kinds of really interesting stuff was there. And it's kind of ironic that not only has, he faced him before he was drafted, but now he faces him on a regular basis being in the same division in the National League West. Another really interesting story that his dad was talking about with Goldschmidt there at that dinner was how his grandfather, Paul Goldschmidt's grandfather, is from Boston and is always grew up a huge Red Sox fan, took his dad to a couple games and stuff like that. And at Paul Goldschmidt's first game at Fenway Park, I don't know if you guys know this, he did hit, I believe it was a 2-run home run that went over the Green Monster.
I just got chills just talking about that.
Exactly.
So
and
awesome.
His grandpa was at the game, and that was the first time where, his grandfather, who was always a lifelong Red Sox fan, had a big old Diamondbacks jersey on and was screaming and shouting. He was just so happy, just elated at that moment. And it also just kind of puts a thought in the back of your mind like, man, if Paul Goldschmidt ever became a free agent or ever considered leaving Arizona, I wonder if he would consider the Red Sox. Just a thought.
He'd probably lean heavily towards the Red Sox. That's a cool moment.
Just an amazing moment, and you couldn't be more happier for the guy. Now, when it came to him getting, I believe he got an invite to spring training in 2011. That was the year that he came up to the big leagues. He wanted to impress, obviously, the rest of the team, the rest of the scouts, everything like that. So he shows up 2 weeks early before all the other players do, and he's working out and stuff like that. He goes in and he does his first workout. And then after he's done, he goes to shower, and when he comes back, he notices that his cleats are gone and his clothes are gone. And he's like, he calls his dad up, and he's like, oh, my gosh, I think somebody stole my stuff, or somebody must have mixed something up. Somebody must have thrown away. Point is, I don't have clothes right now, and I need something. And then turns out it was one of the athletic trainers that was there, and he said that his cleats were so clean that they were cleaner than when he pulled them out of the box. Just to give you an idea of how good they take care of these guys, these major league guys, during spring training, during those, during all those early spring games and stuff like that, which just a really, really, really interesting story. And then, of course, when he gets called up to the majors, he made his major league debut in San Francisco against the Giants. This is about, I believe it was like July or August of 2011. And, of course, you know, he gets the call. He's in Mobile, Alabama, the AAA affiliate for the Diamondbacks at the time. Gets the call as he's eating breakfast with his wife. And he literally jumps up. He tells his wife to go tell everybody else. He packs his bags, and he goes to the airport immediately, because there's always those stories of guys who get called up. They can't, you know, they miss a flight or something like that happens, and they end up calling up somebody else to be there for the game. So he ends up going from... from Mobile to Houston. That was what the flight was supposed to be, and they ran into all kinds of turbulence and a thunderstorm. And there was even a moment while he was on the plane that there was this crazy amount of turbulence, the plane shaking like left and right and all over the place. And then all of a sudden the captain comes on, sorry about that, that wasn't just turbulence, we just got struck by lightning, but no worries, the plane's okay, we'll be landing in Houston very shortly. So he was seriously saying how he was counting his lucky stars to, you know, be able to make it to Houston. And then eventually he made it to San Francisco, where he got a hit in his debut. And then the next night hits his major league home run off of Tim Lincecum.
Wow. So he really does run those pitchers in the NL West. I just want to thank you. That was a really, really great stuff. I want to get into Tech State softball before we run out of time. I could listen to Paul Goldschmidt's stories all day, though.
Yeah, and I got like two more sound bites that we can play maybe at the end of the show, just talking about some of the other stuff that I asked him. But really, really great stuff.
All right. Texas State softball, of course, we mentioned at the top of the hour how dominant they have been for pretty much since the inception. They've been a great program. Texas State had a great weekend in the Bobcat Classic. They hosted at the softball complex. 2-2 with a pair of wins against Sam Houston State and a pair of losses against Florida State. They didn't get to play Portland State because that game was canceled yesterday. The game against, like I said, game against Portland State was canceled due to weather. It's ironic, though, that a lot of schools come south to get away from the cold, and, you know, this big cold front comes in and prevents these last games from being played. So I thought they had a pretty good year. Last year, the Bobcats started their season with the tournament in San Marcos, came out 4-1, and they continued on a 42-17 pace. What do you guys expect from this team? And just before you answer, 2016, 40-22, 2015, 32-21.
I expect just about the same, honestly. I mean, this program has been easily one of the most consistent in all of college softball, I think. You know, it's as far as consistency goes, it's one of the best of the best. And, you know, I think it's, you know, I noticed that it's the same thing last year to kind of start off this year. It was, you know, really good against other teams, but when we play those top 10, you know, those ranked opponents, Texas State kind of struggles. And, you know, it's early on in the season, so they obviously have a lot of time to turn that around and kind of build up that resume when the NCAA tournament comes around. And hopefully they can do that this year, because they weren't really able to do that last year, even though they still made the tournament. But I expect more of the same. Texas State still has Randy Rupp, who is one of the better pitchers in college softball. So she's going to carry the load a lot. She's going to get a lot of reps. And, you know, I expect to see a lot of Texas State wins, you know, nothing outside of the ordinary.
Yeah, I'm sort of the same mindset, too. And one of the really interesting storylines I think that we're going to have this season, and I kind of did a little rap story about this last semester, actually, was how Randy Rupp had her sister catching behind the plate for her last season. Sarah Rupp. And they used to have a really, really interesting, great relationship, you know, pitcher and catcher behind the plate. This year I'm interested to see how Rupp does. And so far, just in her first debut, she did pretty well. Went the whole game, 7 innings, allowed 5 hits and 2 runs, about 8 strikeouts. Overall, not too bad a performance. I almost kind of wish that I could see her against Florida State and the Seminoles over the weekend. I don't know if she made an appearance in any of those games. I don't think she did.
She did. She did. She actually did. So in both of the wins, Randy Ruff was a pitcher of record to record the win, giving up only 7 hits and 2 runs in 14 innings. And the 4-2 loss was also credited to Randy Ruff. Pitched the entire game, gave up 7 hits, 4 earned runs to go along with 5 strikeouts and 3 losses. So she's 2-1 right now with about a 2-point-something ERA. Very, very good. It's really early, but I wanted to my next question was going to be, do we pencil in Rupp as that pitcher that's going to have a dominant senior season? This is last year in San Marcos. I kind of wanted to feel out how you guys felt about – I like that. Feel out how you guys felt about Randy Rupp this being the last year.
Well, I mean, she's the horse for this team. If there's anyone that they're going to be handing the ball to when, you know, it matters most, it's definitely going to be Randy Rupp, whether it be to start a game or whether she might be coming out of the bullpen to get a clutch save, you know, depending on how your bullpen state is. But she's definitely the horse and definitely the one to go to when it matters most.
Yeah, she's definitely, you know, like I said, she's going to be the one getting the bulk of the reps, carrying the load. One thing I would like to see, since she is a senior and this is her last season, I would like to see, you know, the other part of the pitching staff get some more reps just to kind of get them ready for next season. I don't know. It's early on.
That's a tough one, man.
Yeah, I mean, at least early on, you know, I mean, before Texas State gets into, you know, the bulk of conference play and, you know, tournament play and all that, just get them some reps. That way they kind of know what to expect and, you know, because we might have really good freshman pitcher that has no college experience, you know, you want to get them in. So
I counter that with being Randy Rupp is arguably, when basketball season's over, she's going to be the best show in town. When
Randy
Rupp pitches,
yeah.
It's
yeah,
going to be the best show.
Yeah, without doubt.
So, okay, I don't know if we say, like, hey, let's limit her innings. I think that we just ride Randy Rupp as far as we can. So in that 4-2 loss and the 8-0 loss, both to Florida State, the Bobcats hitters had one of their worst games in my recent memory, going against one team, playing one team twice. So they went 5-for-45 as a team and only scored 2 runs against Florida State. I don't think that that's great. Florida State's the 9th-ranked team in the nation as of right now, so that was a pretty good get to come down and play the Texas State Bobcats. So I think that's a really good way to bring people and kind of, you know, test the talent. Do we see this hitting staff being the weak link?
I think it was last season. It was definitely a team that was reliant on the pitching staff. And you know, there were some games where I think there was a stretch where they score the most runs they scored in like a span of 5 or 6 games was maybe 2 runs, 2 or 3 runs. So, I mean, yeah, the offense hasn't found that that big bat yet, that consistent, you know, way to score runs. So
Ariel Ortiz was kind of that player last year, I thought.
Exactly, yeah.
To kind of be the player, you know, that drives in runs. But there were a lot of games last year where it was 2-1
yeah,
victories.
Yeah, because, you know, Ortiz couldn't do that every single game. You know, she couldn't be that that hitter. You know, she couldn't be the Paul Goldschmidt, I guess.
That's a lot to ask from any player. Mm-hmm, is that every time you come up to the bat, you need to get a hit, you need to score a run. That's a tough place to be in.
Yeah, I just think that you know, if the offense is able to step up, you know, it's early on, so there's time. But I mean, yeah, the offense is going to be a weak link. They're going to need to work on it and find a way to find the gaps in the defense and get on base and score runs.
I mean, the offense basically is going to be what determines how far this team can really go, because we know they've got the pitching, we know they've got the arsenal, but there's only so far a pitching staff can take you before, you know, it ends up, you know, starting to struggle a little bit, have a bad night out or anything. You need to, if you're an offensive club like Texas State is, you have to be able to step up in that way to, you know, carry your pitchers when those bad days come, because, you know, pitching isn't always going to be 100% consistent. There are going to be days where, you know, Randy Rupp is not going to have it like she did against Florida State, which, not to discredit Florida State, they're a very good team, but, you know, you're going to have those moments where your offense is going to have to pick you up. I mean, we even saw in Major League Baseball in the World Series, Game 5, Clayton Kershaw was all over the place, and Houston's offense just took off on him. And if it weren't for the Dodgers' offense to keep up in that game, you know, maybe it would have been a blowout. So going back to Texas State, of course, the offense is going to dictate how far this team can really go.
Okay, I like where we went with that. This is Texas State ends up playing Boston College at 1 p.m. later today. Dom and I were joking, this is the Harvard of non-Harvard schools. Boston College. So it should be – I think this is going to be a pretty dominant win. I think Bobcats come out and really clean the clocks with it. I think that they do a really good job. What do you guys think?
I definitely agree with that. I mean, Boston College isn't a great program. They, you know, they finished just above 500 last year. They started off this year 0-4. I don't see Texas State having much of a problem with Boston College here. I think it's going to be a win, and you know, Texas State's going to be able to get that third win of the season.
I'm interested to see, like we've been mentioning about earlier, how the offense responds. So, you know, while they are expected to win, I hope they don't downplay to the competition like we've seen some of the basketball teams doing in some of the recent games that we've had played.
That's what we call a segue. Very good, Alex. Let's talk a little bit about this Texas State women's basketball team. The four-game winning streak is snapped in overtime against University of Texas at Arlington, 61-59. The Bobcats lost to rival UTA Mustangs Saturday with Tasha Levitt and the entire Bobcat team having a pretty bad shooting night. Now, I just want to put this out here that Alex kind of questioned me last week about what happens when Tasha Levitt and the rest of the team doesn't score. It happened. So it happened this week. It's just kind of tough. It was tough shooting night for everybody. Shooting 34% from the field, 15% from behind the arc. Those are clearly some of the worst numbers we've seen all year. Taylor Deere was the only Bobcat to have an okay night scoring. 15 points, 6 of 18 shooting, and dishing out 10 assists. So Taylor Deere had a Taylor Deere type of night, double-double. 10 assists when your team is shooting very poorly is very impressive. Even the poor shooting, the Bobcats were able to tie the game up in the fourth quarter, with 16 points in the fourth quarter, but just fell short in OT. They scored 6 points. Mustangs scored 8 points. So it was a tough game, very hard-fought defensive game, in my opinion. I think that Coach Z did a really good job on game adjustments in the second half.
Well, I mean, Rebecca Van Dyke had a game to play for herself for UT Arlington. She went 9 of 12 field goal-wise, got 5 offensive rebounds, 4 defensive rebounds, 9 rebounds overall. So she was just a dominant force for the team offensively, and I just feel like the Bobcats couldn't really find an answer for Van Dyke in that game.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And, in these recent games, we've seen a lot of high scoring for Texas State, 92 points against Appalachian State, 78 against Coastal Carolina, 83 against Georgia State, so on and so forth. So, I mean, it was just one of those games, it seems like, where just shots weren't falling for everybody. And, Taylor Deere was kind of the one that had to try and shoulder that. And, you know, like you said, 10 assists when your team's shooting pretty poorly is amazing. I mean, just imagine if the shots were going in, she probably would have had way more.
Had a couple more. I'm thinking at least 15, which is, very impressive. Mm-hmm. You didn't mention Van Dyke did a really good job keeping her off the boards, I thought. Because, I mean, like we've mentioned before, this is a player that the Texas State Bobcats won't see again until they play UTA at the end of the season. They won't see this player again. This is head and shoulders going to be one of the best players. This is a first-team All-Sun Belt player in Rebecca Van Dyke. So keeping her only to 9 rebounds, being 6-foot-plus, is very, very good to me. 20 points, you'd like to see that number be kind of checked. Shelby Richardson, however, was the third leading scorer in the game with 14, 8 points from the free throw line. We don't usually see that. We usually see the Bobcats being pretty good with their fouls, not keeping the fouls to a minimum. So just have one player go to the line 8 times in that game, that I feel like that really is what swayed the game.
Well, they also shot, like you mentioned, they shot, not only did they get to the foul line, but they shot very well at the free throw line, going 72% overall on the night. And they also had 17 bench points. So those two factors right there really kind of add up to why, they were able to kind of keep up with Texas State and their offense.
Yeah, you're correct. The bench points really helped. The free throw shooting really helped. I kind of had another idea. I think that Alex asking for Tasha Levin and the rest of the team not to score, I think that's you kind of asked, what would happen? This is what happened. Mm-hmm. So I'm wrong. One time only.
What?
I'm
wrong. He's admitting it? I was right?
I was wrong.
What?
Alex,
shocker.
Alex was correct in saying that this team would not do very well when nobody was scoring the basketball. I don't know what I was thinking to think that Taylor Deere was going to be able to put up 50-plus points. The next time that these two teams see each other will be the last game before the Sun Belt Conference Tournament, and we pretty much can guarantee that that's going to be a playoff spot, that that's going to be a game that's going to be competing for a playoff spot. Right now, we're pushing up on the 30. Right now, Little Rock sits at 12-1. We're going to talk about that coming back out of the break. Texas State 9-4, South Alabama 8-4, Troy 8-4, Louisiana 8-4, UTA 8-5. Alex, do you have that weather for us?
I do have that weather ready to go. It is currently 43 degrees right now and sunny with the wind going about 12 miles per hour. Although, as far as the high today, the high is supposed to be 51 and the low is supposed to be 42, so not much colder than it is right now as far as the low. Although, get your raincoats and jackets and umbrellas ready because tomorrow and Wednesday it is supposed to rain. And although it is still going to be cold, it will progressively get warmer throughout the week. Tomorrow, the high is supposed to be 51, the low 47, and then the high Wednesday is supposed to be 65 with the low of 58.
You're listening to Bobcat Radio on KTSW 89.9.
Hey, turn that down. Some of us have to work in the morning.
But Ma, it's Rolas on KTSW, hosted by Louis G.
What are these Rolas?
It's Spanish slang for songs. Rolas is on every Tuesday night from 10 to 12. They have all kinds of jams from different Spanish-speaking countries.
But I don't know Spanish.
You don't need to know the language to feel the flavor. Listen to Rolas Tuesday nights from 10 to 12 on KTSW, hosted by the one and only Louis G.
Roll with the Rolas that are sweeter than conchas on KTSW, the other side of radio.
Well, this museum is really interesting, but I feel like there's something missing. I feel like this history museum doesn't have enough information on African Americans.
Well, we can head over to the Calaboose African American History Museum if you want. They'll have exactly what you're looking for.
The Calaboose?
It has lots of entertaining and educational exhibits, artifacts, and lectures all about the history and culture of African Americans in San Marcos. It's at the corner of Martin Luther King Drive and South Fredericksburg Street. Let's head over there later.
Get educated with the Calaboose African American History Museum. A message from KTSW, the other side of radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to Bobcat Radio on KTSW 89.9. We just finished up talking a little bit about the Texas State women's basketball team. I want to talk a little bit about Sun Belt Conference women's basketball just in general. In other news, Little Rock, Trojans, and hold on, put a pin in that, pause. Did you guys realize, it hit me today as I was like kind of doing some research for this story, that the Sun Belt Conference has two teams that go by the Trojans?
Yes.
Little Rock and Troy. That, to me, is just so frustrating. Like, what happens if the Big Ten had two Buckeyes? Like, it wouldn't be – you wouldn't be able to do that.
Well, I mean, like, a Buckeye is a very uncommon mascot, so, I mean, it'd be rare to see that. But, I mean,
or if the Big
but like, Wildcats is, like, a very common mascot. I mean, you got Northwestern, Kentucky,
but they're not all in the same,
Kansas State.
They're not all in the same conference, though. That's
true.
What I'm getting.
Yeah.
All right, so – back to the story. In other news, Little Rock was knocked out by Troy Saturday, 76-70 in overtime, which gives Little Rock Trojans their first loss of the season. We talked about last week, can Texas State catch up? Can this Bobcat team catch up to Little Rock? Right now it's looking, I don't think so. There's five games left, but Little Rock had the third best defense in the nation, giving up 56 points per game. So the 76-point burst by Troy is the second most points they've given up all year. The most points they gave up was against third-ranked in the nation, Mississippi State. They gave up 86 to them. So this Little Rock team is legit. This is a very good team. This is a team that, if you told me, was going to play in the NCAA tournament at the end of the season, would not surprise me that they are that good. They are a very solid basketball team. I don't think they're going to catch up to Little Rock. Like we mentioned before the break, Little Rock 12-1, Texas State 9-4 in that second-place position. I will say this. Texas State is in sole position of second place, where if you look at third place, you have three teams, South Alabama, Troy, and Louisiana, all sitting at 8-4.
Well, I think as far as Texas State goes, I mean, they kind of have a shot, but as far as like winning the Sun Belt Conference championship, they have a shot. Not so much, I don't think,
at
in five
seed.
Days. Yeah, at that one seed. But I do think it's a very good possibility that they could get a two seed. What I mentioned earlier was they have to be careful as far as downplaying their competition because they got a game coming up against University of Louisiana, the Raging Cajuns, in which they lost earlier this season. And I think that's going to be a huge I think the loss against UTA was already a huge wake-up call, it being in overtime and them having the bench score as many points and allowing them to get to the free throw line as many times as they did. I think they're going to come back a lot more polished and a lot more ready to go as far as running that offense goes.
Well, Georgia Southern would be the team that the Bobcats would face in the first round of the Sun Belt Conference Tournament if the tournament started today. They sit at 2-11. So I like the odds for that one. After that, it gets kind of murky because, like I said, you have three teams fighting for the three seed. You got two teams fighting at 8-5. UTA and Arkansas State are both 8-5. So there are a couple teams that, you know, share a similar record. So it's going to be interesting at the end of the season where all this kind of, like, shakes out. Mm-hmm. I'm interested. I really do think that the Texas State women's basketball team has a very good shot. They got a puncher's chance to end up in the NCAA tournament. But then you got to play those games before you can get there. The men's basketball team is on a four-game losing streak, so you just completely switch emotions right here. And they've dropped five of their last six. They lost in overtime to UTA. It dropped the Bobcats to 5-6 in a three-way tie with Georgia Southern and UTA for third place in the Sun Belt Conference. Harken back just a mere few weeks ago when Coach Danny Casper was talking about Louisiana Lafayette and the Raging Cajuns and Texas State both fighting for that number one seed. Harken back to those days. Now, Louisiana sits at 11-2, Georgia State 10-3, Georgia Southern, UTA, and Texas State all 7-6. So a game over 500. What good days. So fun fact: Georgia Southern is the last team the Bobcats beat, and that was 3 weeks ago. 3 weeks ago, they had their last victory. The Bobcats were in front in this game from 40 seconds in. Until 5:43 were left in the game. The Bobcats had two chances to win the game in regulation. The first being with Nigel Pearson drove to the lane and went up for the layup. He was hit going up, but no whistle was blown. This is in the official Texas State Bobcats notes that they put in after every game. So I kind of like this bias, not bias, but this little no whistle was blown.
Throwing a little shade.
No whistle was blown and went in for the layup. And the shot was blocked with 1.8. ticks remaining in the game. The Bobcats' shots were not falling in overtime down the stretch, with three shots hitting the front of the rim and not falling in, or hitting the rim and not falling in. So it's almost like just the college basketball gods, just in general, are just laughing at us. Like, it's frustrating at this point.
What's really frustrating is when you have a lot of games that come down to the last couple minutes, and something that Coach Casper has very adamantly mentioned in some of his post-game conferences was how he's disappointed with the way that his team has finished offensively at the end of games, whether, you know, they don't score in the last few minutes or they don't make shots at the free throw line or whatever. Although the thing that stood out to me most, because I was listening to this game on the radio Saturday night, was they had about, I believe it was like 1.6 or about 2 seconds left on the clock, and they had an inbounds play, you know, just to try to throw something up because they were tied, you know, and they could have won it. On the ensuing inbound play, Trey Nottingham threw an alley-oop to a wide-open Alex Peacock. The ball bounced around twice and then out just before the buzzer sounded as the game went into overtime. They had a perfect opportunity to win that game at the buzzer, and bad luck. They just couldn't get it done. What I think is really interesting, and this is what we'll see how this Texas State team kind of finishes off the season. They're having a lot of games where it's either going to overtime or it's coming down to the last few minutes of the game. The more and more they feel that environment, the more and more comfortable they feel. So either this team's going to be brought down to a boil and they're going to get hot off of it, or, you know, they're just going to,
you really do look for the silver lining. I'm very impressed.
It's basically sink or swim right now. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they respond in this next game that they do have against Georgia State, I believe.
See, I think before you can win in overtime, you got to start winning in regulation. And then, you know, kind of get comfortable in that environment. Then when overtime comes, then you can kind of work on that. But, yeah, I would try and win it in regulation. You know, but
if this was a movie, we'd lose all these overtime games. Then the Sun Belt Conference title game would go no team. We would win it.
But I will say this. It's not about how you start. It's about how you finish. So we'll have to see how this team finishes the rest of this season and how they respond going into conference tournament play. If they get hot in conference tournament play, then they have a chance.
If they finish as a 7th seed, they're finished. So I don't know what they're going to do. Trey Nottingham had a career night with 24 points. Nottingham and Nigel Pearson, though, combined for 14 of 38 shooting. That's 36% from the field. And they took 38 of the team's 63 shots. That's a lot of shots.
Mm-hmm.
Two players took over the half the Bobcats shots. I cannot stress that enough, that Trey Nottingham and Nigel Pearson were the two players took half the shots. Where else in the nation are we seeing that, where two players are taking all of the shots? I'm baffled. Texas State does not play or plays conference-leading Raging Cajuns, Louisiana Lafayette Raging Cajuns, this Thursday and ULM Saturday. Does Texas State break the losing streak?
You know what? I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to say they do. You know why?
You are the most optimistic person.
I am. I am very optimistic. This team knows how to step up when the time matters most. And I think in that environment, I think they're like I said, they're kind of, I think at this point in time, I think they're getting brought down to a boil. And I think this could be the turning point into something really, really special.
Pause. Does this game being played in Louisiana change your opinion in any way? The games against Louisiana Lafayette and ULM.
As in
both
changing, as in I think they're going to lose, or
yes.
I think they're going to. I think it changes it for the better.
Okay.
I think they need that hostile environment. We've seen them step up in road games where it comes down to the last few seconds of the game. Remember, in their win against Georgia Southern, you had Trey Nottingham and Nigel Pearson step up huge, make clutch shots down the stretch, and then even drive to the basket and get a couple free throw shots to basically isolate themselves to win the game. I think they're going to have a really tough time as far as defending the boards, because, of course, their only guy down low is basically Eric Terry and Emmanuel King. Eric Terry, excuse me. They'll have to step up really, really big down low, but I do think they have a shot.
I don't think that this is the team to break the losing streak against.
Louisiana Lafayette.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen against Louisiana. Let's see, you got Louisiana Monroe after that. I think that's a winnable matchup.
I don't know, man. So, okay, if Texas State, okay, we'll go pessimistic to kind of oil the water with Alex's take. Lafayette is 11-1. Louisiana's 11-1. So you can kind of chalk that up with Texas State maybe gets a couple good bounces. But the way the ball has been bouncing around the rim recently, I feel like we can chalk that up to a loss. So Texas State will then fall to 7-7. So you go into ULM territory, you go into Monroe. They right now are 5-7. So I don't know exactly who they play, but say they win their game. So now they're 6-7. So now you have a 7-7 Bobcats team versus a 6-7 ULM team. They're trying to get to be 500 too. I don't know, man. To me, the bells in my head are ringing. Like, this is not a good team to bet on. This is not that's where I am right now. This isn't a good team to place to really go on a limb and say anything about, like, good things about. And it really bothers me, because this is one of my favorite teams to watch.
You were excited at the beginning of the year. That's the thing.
I was so excited. I still think that this team has, like, I still have a grain of hope that this team turns it around in these next couple games and just really starts kicking it.
The only reason why I am as optimistic as I am is because it's college basketball. Anything is possible and anything can happen. We've seen March Madness. We've seen how crazy it gets. What do you think I was going to say?
I thought you were going to say, because I believe in our Lord and Savior, Alex Peacock.
Oh, gosh, no. But, no, I mean, we've seen crazier things happen. And I think, like I mentioned earlier, if this team is brought down to a boil and they can get hot, you don't want to run into this team. I really, really believe that. Those guards can be very, very dynamic. I think if Emmanuel King...
Offensively
and defensively. I think if Eric Terry and Emmanuel King can get hot defensively and make a presence for themselves in the post, this is going to be a team that not a lot of people want to run into. Maybe Louisiana ain't going to be scared of them, but I think a lot of other Sun Belt teams are going to be scared of them.
I will go ahead and agree with you on that. That there will be a bunch of teams in the Sun Belt Conference that will be worried about Texas State, not offensively. I don't think any team is like, I don't know if we're going to be able to go up and down the court and score with the Texas State offense.
Yeah.
I think they're more like, how are they going to isolate Harvey? Like, Harvey was... came in the same kind of, or he was one of the players of the year. I think he was a first team mm-hmm. Sun Belt player of the year last year. He had not a great game. He didn't have a great
game. Well, the Bobcats went right at him too.
That's what I'm saying. They did a really good job of making sure that when he got the ball, he was uncomfortable with it. Off the ball, he was uncomfortable. They did a really good job at that. Same goes with Simmons at Georgia Southern. They did a really, or Simons at Georgia Southern, they did a really good job making him uncomfortable.
I mean, you can even make the argument for Trey Nottingham and Nigel Pearson. If you can shut those guys down offensively, then you definitely have a chance of winning the game if you're playing against Texas State.
No, they have anybody has a chance of beating Texas State. All they need to do is break the offense or break the defense. If they can just score, if another team comes in and scores, say, once every four possessions, Texas State won't score once every four possessions. Like, it's empirically proven that they are not a very good offensive team. The only time that we score a lot of points are in the second half when we really grind a team down. I will say that. We are very good stamina-wise, that we have guys that can play the entire game. Offensively, I don't know. I honestly don't know how good we can be offensively. We went to overtime. We almost went to double overtime, and the two teams didn't score 60 points. So it's this offensively, I cannot co-sign. I cannot say that this team is going to go far until they figure out the offense.
Yeah, I guess that is a fair point. I mean, like I've mentioned in weeks before, like we've all mentioned weeks before, is what happens when this team is slowed down to a half court, you know?
They get slowed down the half court all the time.
What happens. Their offense kind of crumbles. They need to find a way to get some better ball movement between the guards of Nigel Pearson and Alex Peacock. And then, And then that's where their guys inside, whether it's Eric Terry or whether it's Emmanuel King, they really have to step up and be huge for this team. Because if you can find a way to move the ball inside and out, whether it's dribble drive, whether it's a screen, whatever offense you're trying to run, that's what makes your team dangerous offensively. Of course, they love to score in transition. Any team would. But if you can find a way to break that half court, then they have a chance.
Do you think they have a shot against the Raging Cajuns?
Sure.
Okay, and you don't?
I do not. Okay. Here's my thing. I think if they have not figured out the offense by now, with five games left in the regular season, they are not going to figure it out. I really think that.
I want to get into this Paul Goldschmidt talk a little bit more, but we're going to do that in the later half of the show. We do, however, want to talk about Texas State baseball. Friday, the Texas State baseball season begins. Now, I didn't think this day was ever going to come. I thought, well, I'm not kidding. Like, Texas State baseball goes for a very long time, but it felt like really, I don't know even if it was school or if it was just it being cold, it felt like the days were grinding out. Every single day last week felt like a week. Maybe it's because I'm so ready for Texas State baseball season this Friday. They start against Oklahoma State Cowboys. I have a rooting interest in this game. I always make fun that as a media member, you don't really have a rooting interest. You try to be as unbiased as possible. I have an active rooting interest for the Texas State Bobcats to beat the Cowboys because I was telling Dominic about this off-air. Oklahoma State Cowboys fans are arguably some of the most annoying college fans in just the entire world.
I don't know. I think A&M is pretty up there.
A&M's close to the top. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm just saying Oklahoma State gets slept on for being annoying. So last year the Bobcats went 1-2 against the Cowboys in Stillwater. So they played in Oklahoma, went 1-2. This year they play in San Marcos. The Texas State baseball team finished 29-30, a game under 500. I know we talk about that this is kind of a 500 club, kind of a 550 club.
The past few years they've been, you know, around 500. And like I said last year, you know, that this team was consistently inconsistent. You know, they'll get hot and then they'll lose their next three or four games.
I think the biggest question for this team is pitching. They got the offense, they got the bats that can make things interesting, but if their pitching can't step up, then it might as well just be a shootout all the way through. I mean, you got to have clutch pitching when it comes to, you know, coming down the stretch in the final few innings of a ball game, and that's what we saw in a lot of couple games that we saw them lose last year. But I definitely think that with their new pitching coach, I think they certainly have a chance. He certainly has experience at Texas State.
That's what Reed Graff has been saying too. I think he thinks that pitching is going to be like a bigger deal. I think that he thinks that, you know, the pitching is set in the offensive. I don't know.
Last year the pitching staff was really young, and so I think that's what a big factor was, that they didn't have that big game experience. I think this year, you know, they have a year under their belt. You know, the offense, if it's half as good as last year, then they're going to be fine. But I think that the pitching is going to be you know, significantly better than last year. Just because of that experience alone. And, you know, last year, another thing, at the beginning of the season, defense was a problem, you know, especially in the middle infield. there were quite a few errors. I'm curious to see if they clean that up, you know, if that's something that they worked on during the offseason. That'll be a good series to see, though, if they were able to work out the kinks.
You know, it's funny that you say that, because at that dinner, Ty Harrington said that if he could describe the pitching staff and the team overall in one word, it would be experience, which is really, really interesting to hear.
For a college baseball team, too. So we're going to have a little bit more of that Paul Goldschmidt audio. We have more Alex Gibbs, Paul Goldschmidt stories that I'm super excited for. But we got to get into the break. Bobcat Radio is sponsored by the University Bookstore, located on the second floor of the LBJ Student Center. The University Bookstore provides support for Tech State programs, departments, events, and organizations. For more information, go to bookstore.txstate.edu or 245-2273. You're listening to Bobcat Radio on KTSW 89.9.
Password. Speak easy. An up-and-coming show on KTSW 89.9, airing Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 8 to 9 a.m. Speakeasy's got the goods that are hard to get, like exclusive interviews with the biggest bosses that run the Texas State and San Marcos machines. You a leader with a yarn to spin? Chat up Speakeasy host Dawson Van Steenhouse and let her rip. Speaking's easy, but listening's where the moon shines. Get your fix with Speakeasy.
Life is stressful. Sometimes using alcohol and drugs seem like an easy way to deal with stress, but being sober doesn't have to be hard. The Student Recovery Alliance is a peer-led support group for Texas State students wishing to live a sober college experience. The Student Recovery Alliance provides strong social support for students by helping you to manage your thoughts and behaviors while maintaining motivation and sobriety. Meetings are held Thursdays at 5 p.m. in Conference Room 202 at the Student Health Center. A message from KTSW, the other side of radio.
Welcome back. If you're just now tuning in, you can listen to the entire Monday Bobcat edition, or Monday edition of Bobcat Radio on the KTSW blog. You can also listen to the Ride in the Pine podcast. I keep plugging that away. We want to get into the Paul Goldschmidt stories. I know for sure, because we just talked about a little bit about Texas State baseball. Tell us what he kind of had to say about the Texas State baseball team.
Well, he's very, very excited, and he kind of has the same thoughts that we do, is that the offense is very good, but the pitching is what he's questioning about. You know, how good can the pitching get this year? And what's really interesting is I asked about his experience, if he could go back in time and kind of talk to his former self, like, what would he say? And he kind of had the generic response, you know, like, you know, well, it's all about hard work and it's about dedication and stuff like that. He's like, but once you really experience it for yourself, and you go through those, you know, you kind of learn as you go. And I feel like a lot of us can, really kind of like relate to that. So I segued that into the next question I have for him, which was, well, what advice do you have for the Texas State baseball team? And here's what he had to say.
Yeah, I got an opportunity to speak with the team today in the locker room after practice, and kind of just those things I hit on. I told them to work hard. I think that's the best way you're going to improve, whether it's school, music, sports, whatever it is. I mean, you're going to have to put in the hard work. And so that's kind of the first thing I start with. And then, you know, after that, kind of like I talked about earlier, the focus and the quality over quantity. You can take as many swings or as many reps as you want, but if they're not good reps, then you're not going to get better. And then I also just said, just enjoy it. The memories that I have here at Texas State are as good as any I've had in the big leagues. And I just want the kids to know, you know, how fortunate they are, and just really don't let it pass you by. I've talked with former teammates tonight. You know, we still cherish those memories. And like I said, my 3 years here were as good as any I've had anywhere else.
And speaking of good years he's had anywhere else, he had quite a good season last year with the Arizona Diamondbacks as they made the postseason, beat the Colorado Rockies in the wild card game, but unfortunately was swept by the eventual National League champion Dodgers in the National League Division Series. But here's what he had to say on that experience last year going to the postseason again, and his thoughts on spring training coming up in the next few weeks.
Yeah, it was great. You know, I got a taste of the postseason my first year in 2011 in the big leagues, and then it was 5 years where you didn't get in the playoffs. So, you know, there's some ups and downs, but it's just so much more fun when you're winning. And, you know, the wild card game where we won, it's nothing like that, a one-game playoff, and it's crazy to be a part of that. You know, we didn't live up to our ultimate goal of winning the World Series, but, you know, hopefully we can learn from last year. And you know, we got to start back at square one. None of those wins carry over. You know, there's a lot of new players and stuff like that, so we'll be working hard, but you know, it's definitely motivating to be that close and come up a little short, but you know that, you know, hopefully next year you can keep getting better and reach the ultimate goal of winning the World Series.
And that, of course, was Paul Goldschmidt. He actually grew up an Astros fan, actually, especially in high school. And that was the years where they obviously made the World Series there in 2005, but unfortunately were swept by the White Sox. So I asked him about what he thought about the Astros winning it this last October. And obviously he was very adamant about, you know, well, it's cool because I watched them growing up.
Wish it could be me.
Yeah, he's like, but I wish that could be me, you know, of course, because, you know, they got close, obviously. They got to the Division Series, but they were swept by the Dodgers. But still, Paul Goldschmidt, one of the nicest guys you'll ever talk to. A lot of incredible stories that you never really get to hear, you know, on TV. Because, I mean, they'll interview him and they'll ask him about, oh, like his season. And maybe there might be a funny story here or there. But you don't get to hear stories like that or his thoughts on, like, being at Texas State and stuff like that. So
one of the most interesting things that I kind of knew before you ended up talking to Paul Goldschmidt is he doesn't have any social media.
No.
Too.
Doesn't have a Twitter.
Yeah, we're talking about that. It's just weird. No Twitter, no Instagram.
It's not weird. I just think it's unique. So I want to get into the Weekend Loser.
Weekend Loser.
Dom, we'll start with you.
I'll start it off. My Weekend Loser is going to be Isaiah Thomas of the now Los Angeles Lakers. You know, just when he got traded, he was the butt of all the jokes going around NBA Twitter. And then when they played the Mavericks over the weekend, he got matched up with Dirk Nowitzki a couple times, and the size difference is quite substantial. So it just basically looked like Dirk was posted up on
a child,
yes, for quite some time in the game. And so Isaiah Thomas just not having a good weekend. Probably wants to stay off social media for a while.
He had 22.
Yeah, he had a good game, just, you know.
Not a great matchup.
Yeah.
Alex?
My Weekend Loser is the number two team in the country in college basketball, the Virginia Cavaliers. They had a game against Virginia Tech last Saturday where they lost 61-60. And Virginia Tech, they're kind of an under-the-radar team because they have a very hot offense, but their defense really is what, you know, they're lacking. But it's really interesting how Virginia Tech was able to get that upset done at Virginia. So that's why Virginia is my Weekend Loser.
We haven't had a lot of just upsets and, you know, teams falling apart. It's been very exciting.
I think Virginia Tech's upset Virginia the last couple years, too. There's been a couple times they've done it, so I don't know.
I believe that was the first time Virginia Tech won at Virginia, I think, for the first time in like 20-something years, which is really, really cool to see.
Yeah.
My Weekend Loser, of course, has to be Paul Pierce. So for the longest time, we knew that February 11th was going to be the day that Paul Pierce was going to get his number retired in TD Garden. It's very, you know, ceremonial deal. Isaiah Thomas was on the Cavaliers at the time. They were going to do a video tribute. Paul Pierce was like, nah, he doesn't deserve a video tribute. So there was a lot of animosity just in that short window. And then, of course, LeBron James gets this new revamped Cavaliers team and just runs the Celtics off the court. Runs them completely off the court. It was very frustrating for me as a Celtics fan to see this. But I'm going to tag in a little footnote here, too. I used to be the biggest Paul Pierce fan until Brendan Snow came in my life. And all he does is slander Paul Pierce to the point where I'll go back and watch Paul Pierce games and be like, yeah, you know, he kind of is a bum. Like, it has been very difficult for me these last couple days. And, of course, for Paul Pierce, too. His team, I mean, seemed about ran off the court, the team he was rooting for.
I mean, yeah, the Cavs did run the Celtics off the court. But it's kind of like, you know, what we were talking about last week, how, you know, the Rockets, you know, ran the Cavs off the court and there was all the things going on with LeBron. We can't really say how teams are going to end. Like, people were going to conclusions like, oh, my gosh, the Rockets are going to go to the finals and Celtics are going to go to the finals. We don't know until that postseason hits.
People were saying that about the Cavs after that one game.
Like, they may not even make the finals this year. Oh, everybody just relax. Everybody just relax.
That's what I'm saying. They're like, oh, Cavs are back. They beat the Celtics. So they're going to Cavs in four. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, this is
really easy now.
It's crazy. So the other thing is last Wednesday was National Signing Day. So we got to see young athletes from all over the country sign with their respected college teams. Of course, Texas State got 22 signees. We're almost to that threshold now. We have about 70 plus guys on scholarship. The max is 85. So we're slowly getting to that point. It's going to take us about another year and a half probably to get to that point where we got a bunch of guys on scholarship. With that being said, I want to go into what I wish everybody would have talked about a little bit more. One of the signees, and we're going to do this every Monday for sure, talk about one of the signees. Taylor Vitt.
Tyler Vitt.
Tyler Vitt. What's wrong with me? Tyler Vitt, three-star quarterback out of MacArthur High School in San Antonio, the Alamo City, my city. 6'1", 202 pounds, a pro-style kid is what everybody's been saying. This guy is a pro-style quarterback.
This kid can run, though.
He can run.
I think he topped out at a 4.46 40-yard dash at the Nike Elite.
So we got 87 touchdowns over his three seasons as a starting quarterback. Passing yards for his senior year, he had 2,501. And for his career, 7,454 passing yards, 1,701 rushing yards. For his 3 years being starting quarterback at MacArthur, this kid looks like he's going to hopefully take the Texas State Bobcats to that next level.
Well, hopefully, it should be interesting to see the kind of dynamic between him and Willie Jones III, kind of that quarterback battle going on, because last year it was basically all Damian Williams and Willie Jones III got maybe a few snaps here and there. Should be interesting.
Something to keep your eye on. Thank you for listening to Bobcat Radio on KTSW 89.9. You can listen to all of Bobcat Radio's on the KTSW blog. Look for